hashtag No Limits. Hashtag No Limits is about people who society places limits upon, but who have busted through those limits. Ophelia says in Hamlet, we know who we are, but not who we will be. And I believe that to be 100% true, and that there is no better example of that than the caterpillar turning into the butterfly. For those who don't know, the caterpillar literally dissolves into just cells and then reforms into the butterfly. While that's difficult and challenging, I'm sure, it still isn't ready to fly. It has to struggle even more to build the strength of its wings to take it wherever it wants to go when it's ready to come out of that cocoon. As I said, I can't imagine that any of that is easy, but neither is busting through limits that society places upon people. And mostly I see this, and the reason for this show is because of my work in special education and working with kids who I found I loved the most, who had a lot of unwanted behaviors. And today, Dr. Rebecca Wolf is going to share with us a program that she has developed and that is a I'm going to let her say it. I don't want to mess it up how it's described. So Dr. Wolf, thank you so much for being here. How are you doing today?
I'm doing very well. I'm so happy to be here, Shelley. Glad that I could be a part of your show and was very excited to hear about No Limits, because I think some of the work that I do with families really does support children in reaching their limits, right? And not being held yes. back. And so I have a book and corresponding workshops for a punishment-free childhood. So that's what we'll be chatting about today.
Awesome. And Fran has already done this for me. I always kind of forget the businessy side of things, the housekeeping side. If you are watching live or in the replay, give us a hashtag live or a hashtag replay and let us know where you're watching from. If you are joining us live, we love it. Or I love it. I shouldn't speak for Dr. Wolf, but I love it when the audience interacts and asks questions. It just helps us know that what we're doing is valid and that people are really interested. So if you're watching an either live or replay, go ahead and put those comments in. If it is during the replay, I will make sure that Rebecca and or I answer your questions. If it's a question for her, I will for sure forward it to her and get the right answer and not give you my opinion. So how, Dr. Wolf, did you come to doing what you're doing?
Sure. So it really is based on my personal parenting journey. I actually have four daughters, and I have two older daughters and then two younger daughters. And first of all, for any of you who are a parent, you know that children are different. And so what worked for one was not working for another. And so I dove into the research on parenting with my first two. I also ended up being a parenting coach, where I was trained to do the workshops for redirecting children's behavior, and so really started to work with many families. And then additionally, really just kind of watching the world around me and made the connection that a lot of the negative things that can happen in our world sometimes are triggered because we want to punish each other. And I'll be, you know, pointed in that I live in Colorado, and the Columbine shooting at the high school, was very close to home. And what I recognized is the many factors, of course, that are involved in something that, like that. One of them was those boys wanted to punish those classmates, right? They felt like they had been bullied. They felt like they'd been wronged. And because what they know is you're punished when you do something wrong. That's what they thought was the best approach in that moment. And so thinking about, could we change the punishment paradigm? It's a big change. It's a big idea. But I think that it's possible. And so when I had my two younger children, I said to the little bit of fear in my family, I'm going to raise these two without any punishment. So not just physical punishment, but no timeouts, no grounding, no taking away. We are going to learn how to be a human just by teaching, right? By you know, when they do something wrong, we point it out and we say, and here's how you should do that. But there's no punishment associated with misbehavior or with mistakes. And so that's really how I came into this work.
That's awesome. And, you know, that to me was a beautiful way, but also a sad comment on society describing that we are punishment driven. Mm-hmm. And I find that as an IEP coach, when I am in school districts and we're working with a family who has a child who has a lot of unwanted behaviors. And I hope that when I say unwanted versus wrong, that had clued in with you, because I used mm-hmm. to say, you know, negative behaviors or wrong behaviors. And through my own studies realized that there's a lot of things that some people say are wrong or negative, but other people aren't bothered by. And so in talking, especially with a lot of parents over the years, I've changed my terminology to unwanted or wanted behaviors. But I see that so often that it is punishment driven. Like, well, you know, we just keep punishing them. Okay. But don't you understand that all those things that you're doing are not changing the child's behavior? Mm-mm. So I hate to word this way, but I don't know how else to say it, but who's the slow learner in that situation?
I love it.
you know, if you just keep disciplining and you're never giving mm-hmm. any other skills, you're never giving any other strategies, you're never getting to the root of why something is occurring over and over again, I don't understand how people think that the behavior will just change.
Correct. And I love your language of saying unwanted and wanted, and that is subjective. And really, you know, I did a fair amount of academic research in writing my book, and, you know, researchers have shown that punishment actually contributes to more misbehavior. So, you know, not only is it not helping, but it's probably contributing to the issue. As well as, you know, I share a story about, I was having a conversation with my own mother, and she was talking about a friend, and she said, this friend has a little boy who's just totally out of control. And the more they try to control him, the worse it gets. Right? So it's that mm-hmm. same idea. You know, our children are humans. And just like us, we don't want to be controlled. And in fact, I always say you can't, nor should you want to control the behavior of another human. And so these solutions that we've used in the past, whether that's punishment or trying to control, actually don't support our children. So it sounds like we are both on a similar path.
Yeah. So when I saw, you know, that your name had come across my field of vision, so to speak, and I found it very intriguing. Now I do still, I will admit, have, you know, some, I when we raised our daughter, you know, we did occasionally have some timeouts. And I did that with my students as well. I followed that up with conversation and discussion of like exactly what you mentioned at the beginning. You know, what you did was unwanted, and here's what I would have preferred, or here's a more socially acceptable way, or, you know, whatever it was. And then also tried to get my daughter to understand her actions and how they made other people feel. But yeah, I mean, we did still have time out, and we did still have, you know, some removal of privileges occasionally. So I'm very intrigued with, so you did this with your daughter. Mm-hmm. How many other people have you used your program with, and to what extent is it success?
Right. So I, what's interesting, cause I'm nodding my head, because I did do timeouts with my older two children, right. And took things away mm-hmm. and sent them to their room. And, you know, that was really part of the learning process. In fact, you know, there was one time where it was the middle of the night and I couldn't get her to sleep. And I'm like, I'm just going to put you in timeout. And so here it is like 2 a.m. and I've got like this 3-year-old sitting in timeout. And I'm like, oh my gosh, what's wrong with this picture? Right. So I do totally connect with that. And so then it was my younger two who really have not experienced that. And I will share that my book is recently released. And so I have shared it with several families, but they're all in the early stages of implementing this. So it's really my own two children that I have so far that are the results of the experiment there, but they are 20 and 22. And it's been very interesting talking to them, right, about what was it like growing up without punishment. And you know, one of them said, you know, well, I don't know anything different, right? I wouldn't know what it was like to be at home and have somebody punish me. But I do think what it has done is it has, you know, I love the name of this No Limits, because I think that what I see in them is kind of this open-heartedness, because they didn't walk around on eggshells or feel like they had to close themselves down because of this fear of being punished, right? They knew that mm-hmm. if they made a mistake, that it would be addressed and that we would talk about it and what is the appropriate behavior. But I feel like one of the results of this work is really having children who are, I don't know, it's very freeing for them, right? To not have to wonder if I'm going to be punished, because no child gets up in the morning and says, I think I'm going to misbehave today or perform some unwanted behaviors, right? It's an accident right. typically for them. So it catches them off guard when all of a sudden they're punished. So not having to worry about what's around the next corner and am I going to be punished, I think has helped. And then I think the other thing that was very interesting to me was when I was talking to one of them was they said, I hardly ever feel angry. In fact, my friends have noticed that it takes a lot for me to get angry. And I think when we are punished, most of the time it feels unjustified, right? Like if I could just say my piece as a child and say, but, you know, but instead as the parent, we feel like we need to punish. I think that that does build up quite a bit of anger in our children's lives. And so I think that's one of the other outcomes that I've seen for this process. And then I'll also share that the title of the book is The Gift of a Punishment-Free Childhood. And of course, the assumption is that it's a gift for the child, which of course it is. But really what I realized is it's a gift for the parent. Right? When you're having to regularly try to control your child, you know, try to punish, you know, to get into those power struggles, that can be exhausting. And when I compare the childhood, you know, my role as a parent with my older two children and then the younger two, I was just so much more relaxed, right? Because, and like you, I was a teacher. I actually taught in the college, but it's still that teaching relationship, which is enjoyable, right? We love when we can support people in learning. And in this case, we're teaching them how to live on the planet, right? How do you treat other people? You know, how do you act in a store, right? All of those things that, you know, it's our role to show them how to live on this planet successfully. And I think the best way to do that is to model. And like you said, to have those conversations.
Yeah. And I found myself with a lot of my students really treating them as a whole person and not just, okay, you're coming to see me because you're behind or you're learning differently in math or reading, but there's so much that I think with behavior needs to be much more involved and hands-on. And I think a lot of parents in the last several decades are tired. And they don't have the energy and they don't have the knowledge. And so I'm afraid what people might be hearing through you and through your book is I can just let my kids do whatever they want to do. And I don't think that's what you're saying. But I feel like I've seen that in the last like 10 or 12 years that parents have just totally become hands off, and they've kind of taken your approach without getting that there's another side. Because as I said, it's that involvement. It's that, okay, you did make a mistake. You did, you know, yell at somebody or hit somebody or, you know, take something that you wanted. And when I'm thinking of this, I'm thinking of, you know, like under say age 12 ish mm-hmm. or so, and helping them understand, like I said, that I did with our daughter, like, well, when you, for example, this wasn't with my daughter, but this was when I was in a substitute situation and I was in a class of first graders and they all like to talk. And I was trying to teach and I finally stopped the class and I said, do you guys know why I don't like it when you're talking, when I'm talking? And they were like, well, you just want us to be quiet. And I said, well, I want you to be quiet because if I'm talking and you're trying to talk over me, what that tells me is that what you have to say in your mind is more important than what I have to say. And I'm happy to listen to you at an appropriate time.
Yeah, I love that.
And they seemed like, oh, like, you know, I'm not trying to hurt your feelings, you know, and we did. We had kind of a discussion for several minutes about that because I guess nobody had explained that to them. Like, yes, I want you to be quiet, but why do I want you to be quiet? And there mm-hmm. is an appropriate time. So, I mean, I didn't discipline them at that point. So hopefully that was kind of along the lines of what you're talking about. Like, you don't just let it go.
No. No, you can't. I mean, you're doing the child a disservice if you just let it go, right? Then there, mm-hmm. I mean, you probably have done as much, if not more. You know, if children don't have boundaries, that's a terrible feeling for a child, mm-hmm. right? They need yes. to know, you know, because it gives them safety. So you absolutely need to have that. And so much of what you just were talking about and asking about, one is I do think families are overextended and that does make it challenging because punishment is a quick fix, right? Mm-hmm. If I can threaten you with something that's important to you, like I'm going to take away I'm not going to let you go to your best friend's house for the next week. Ooh, right? That's a blow. So it's a quick fix. It's like, ooh, I don't want to lose that privilege, right? That's important to me. And so they will do almost anything you tell them to do, right? And think about that. Think about what that is modeling. Whoever is in power, whoever, you know, holds the power can make me do things out of that fear, right? They're not yeah. learning about why they shouldn't do what they're doing. They're just doing it out of fear. And it is a quick fix. So when we're tired, when we've been running back and forth to soccer practice, when maybe we haven't eaten well because we've had to get dinner on the go, right? All of things mm-hmm. do contribute to making it easy to fall back on punishment because it is a quick fix, right? We get that behavior adjusted very quickly, but it has very long-term negative consequences. What was the other piece I was going to add to that?
While you're thinking about that, and hopefully yeah, this doesn't throw you off more, but sometimes that quick fix, like you just example of you're not going to go to your best friend's house for a week, while it may immediately stop the behavior, a lot of times parents don't follow through, which mm-hmm. then, you know, because it's like, oh, 2 days. Okay. Now I'm having to deal with you here at home. And so that quick fix is now like, oh, okay, this is, you know, I'm just go. And then that doesn't give those kids that boundary that you talked about.
That's
they,
right.
They need those boundaries and they need to know, at least in my research, that those boundaries are pretty immovable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's so important. And
you don't follow through.
Right. Sorry. And so I think that's, you know, that's what's important is they do need to know that what you say is what you're going to follow through on. And so idle threats, right, are the worst because then, mm-hmm. then it becomes this dance of, well, how serious are they? You know, will they really mm-hmm. ground me? Right. Then it's all about that power struggle. It's not about learning better behaviors or right wanted behaviors over unwanted behaviors. Right. You had mentioned 12 and under. I think that's where I wanted to go because I do think that teenagers in particular are often the parent-child relationship gets damaged more as children move into those teenage years, because one, we can't overpower them anymore. Oftentimes they have a little bit more autonomy. And if we're continuing to use punishment to get to control their behavior, it gets even worse, right? I think that people right. struggle with the teenage years, not because of the teenagers, but because we think that we have to continue to parent them the way we always have, and it needs to change. And I think I saw a comment come up from one of our listeners who said, yes. parenting changes all the time, right? Ever evolving. That's exactly right. Yes. Right? As your child develops, your parenting has to develop. And it does take effort and it takes creativity. And that is what makes this approach a little challenging, is you really have to be committed to it, because it's easy to fall back on kind of what we know and maybe how we were raised, and to stop and think, okay, I'm not going to punish, but I need to address his behavior. What does that look like?
Yeah. So can you share some examples? I don't know if they're in your book or just from examples from your own experiences of, you know, kind of maybe walk us through a scenario. Mm-hmm.
Right. You know, the one I think that's a good one to share, you know, you picture maybe a little 4-year-old outside playing with, you know, out in the rain, and it maybe is a little bit muddy, but they're very excited. They're having fun. You know, maybe they have found a frog in the puddle, right? Their mindset is all about this play and wonder, right? That's where they're coming from. And they run in the house super excited, and all of a sudden there's mud on the hallway floor, right? And you've had conversations, right? Take your boots off at the door. But this child, in their state of being a child, right, has forgotten that. And so you can imagine those two approaches, right? The punishment approaches, you know better than that. And get back down there and take those boots off, and you go up to your room, and hopefully next time that'll help you remember, right? Think of what we've just done to that child, right? We've shut them down. Yeah. They wanted to share this wonderful experience, right? And so in that case, right, the child runs in, you know, you can see their energy, and you're like, oh, you know, it sounds like you've had a lot of fun out there. You know, I'm glad to hear that you enjoy playing in the rain. You know, let's stop for a minute though, and let's look at the hallway. And then they're going to look around and go, oh, there is mud all over, right? They're going to come to that realization on their own. And so then you'll just say, you know, we want to keep our hallway clean, you know, so maybe in the future, let's try to remember to take our boots off. But, you know, what would be a good solution today? If you can have them come up with the option, and they're like, well, we probably need to clean it up. And then you work with them, clean up the mud, right? Then that is going to help them to learn about the, you know, the true consequences of their behavior, right?
Yes.
That they're addressing the situation, and that they're not a bad person. They just made a mistake, right? It was unwanted behavior. You're not a bad person. And that story also, I think, helps to illustrate, I think, one of the things we do oftentimes to our children is we back them into corners where they almost feel like they have to lie. So let's say you didn't see this, right? And all of a sudden you see it, and you come and you go up to a child, and I think the child would probably be older, because you probably wouldn't do that to a 4-year-old, but it's like, did you get mud all over that floor? Well, as soon as mm-hmm. you say an accusatory question like that, most people are going to be like, oh my gosh, I'm going to get in trouble if I tell the truth, right? It makes it harder for them to tell the truth. And so really, rather than accusatory questions, just state an observation. Hey, I saw that there's mud all over the floor, and it looks like it's your boots. Let's figure out what we can do about the mud on the floor.
Right.
So,
yeah. And I work with a group of students, teenagers, and they all go to a behavioral school. Mm-hmm. And I see this so often, exactly what you're talking about. Like, well, you know, they keep getting into trouble for talking out of turn, or not raising their hand to and then waiting to be called on, or being up and out of their desk. And I constantly hear from the staff, well, they know what the rules are. Yeah, but, you know, they also, a lot of them have neurodivergent brains. So they might have ADD, they might have trauma, they might have autism. And as you just said, you know, they're in that moment of, I want to talk to my friends. I want to shout out the answer because I'm excited, because I know the answer. And not that there isn't a consequence, as you said, but they don't work with them and teach them, you know, exactly what I just said. Like when you blurt out the answer, you know, that's without you meaning to, you're being disrespectful, you know, and just going through that and talking with them and, you know, finding like another way if they need to be up, you know, if they're constantly up out of their desk and they're constantly getting marked down for that. Well, what can we do to help them get that movement need taken care of so that they're not moving around the classroom when you don't want them to be? You know, give them a space to move around in, or give them a fidget, or find, you know, again, I become a two-year-old kind of when I'm dealing with unwanted behaviors, because I want to find out why. Why is this behavior happening? Did somebody not describe it to you? Did somebody not reach your heart? And that's something that I teach in my behavior classes that I teach teachers, is until we can reach a person's heart, we're not as likely to change the behavior. When they understand the reason behind the rule, you have a better opportunity for them to follow the rule that you've placed in front of them.
Well, you know, I think that goes with being a parent, right? When you're connected to your child's heart, when you are, when you have that solid relationship with them, and you know their goodness, and that's what you see as your goal, is to bring out that positive self and that good self. It makes all the difference.
Yeah. And absolutely what you just said, the fact that it's their behavior and not them, that you love them. You're not so excited about that unwanted behavior.
Right. Exactly.
And I don't feel that we do a good enough job of that in society in general, in classrooms, very specifically, and sometimes in homes, because it is like you've said, it's so easy to revert back to negative, you know, I'm going to yell at you. I'm going to do that quick fix. I'm going to, you know, ground you or take whatever away, or, you know, give you an extra chore or whatever it is. But I like the ideas that you brought up, because those are kind of like natural consequences. Like, oh, hey, there's dirt on the floor. Where did this dirt come from? Oh, you know, it kind of looks like it might be from your shoes. You know, and again, depending on the age,
exactly.
You know, and what do you think we should do about that? Because I think natural consequences have more power than just saying, go to your room.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. And I think too, I think another thing that helps, and I'm sure, you know, is this idea that we have to control the behavior of someone, right? I think that parents have the opportunity to recognize, well, for one, you know, there's more than one way to do something. And so if you have a 12-year-old, perfect age, right, is loading the dishwasher. So it's their turn to load the dishwasher, and they don't load it the way that you want it, you have to be okay with that. So, I think learning how to let go of control was probably one of my biggest lessons as a parent, right? I wanted to control everything. And learning that their little lives are their lives, and we need to be there to kind of usher and support and guide and, you know, create those boundaries so they stay safe and healthy. But to let them, you know, have that room to explore and to try new things and to maybe be creative in how they load the dishwasher or how they take out the trash, or, you know, giving them that autonomy, giving them that ability to have a voice can make such a difference, right? Then you're going to get less unwanted behaviors because they're feeling good about themselves.
Yep. Yeah, 100%. Again, something that I teach in I call the class Understanding Behaviors, because it is, if you have a child and you think the function of their behavior is control. Okay. So our kids in today's world have very little control, and absolutely during the pandemic, we as adults had a lot of our control taken away, and kids had no concept of what was going on as to why they couldn't go places and, you know, why they couldn't go to school. And then once they went back to school, why they had to wear a mask and why they had to stay from their friends. And, you know, and we just keep piling all these rules on them and not giving them any opportunity to have any autonomy. And so it's what I tell them is give them choices throughout the day, simple things that it truly doesn't matter which choice they pick. You're still going to get the outcome that you want. And it's simple things truly as like, do you want to write with a marker or write with a pencil? Do you want to, you know, use construction paper or use lined paper? Do you, I mean, just there's so many little choices that, again, just give them, you know, two choices, choose between this one and this one, be okay with whichever choice they pick. Mm-hmm. And then they don't, then they're like, oh, I have some control.
Exactly. And it's so important.
Yeah. Right.
And you do it with your 2-year-olds, right? It's just, it has to be age appropriate, right? So do we want to put your boots on first or your coat? Right. Because we have to get ready to go outside, right? If you have one of those children that hates to put their coat on, right? So you want to put your coat on first or your boots on first? And then, you know, they're like, oh, okay, I have a choice in this. And then, you know, that it just makes all the difference when they, you know, when it's theirs.
Yeah. And all of that, it does go back to what you spoke on at the beginning of it's freeing for the adult, because you have to let go. And I agree, you know, like if they load the dishwasher, and if they load it incorrectly and the dishes, when the dishwasher is finished, are not clean, well, now we have to hand wash them. So now we're going to learn, you know, oh, there's a different way to load the dishwasher. But we get so caught up in they have to know how to do it the right way or my way the very first time. And we don't allow that natural consequence to happen. And giving that, oh, okay, I can let that go. The dishes are still going to get clean. It just might look a little different than the way I would prefer it done. And for my students that I work with, the neurodivergent students, there are so many times when it really does, people are punishing my students because it's a need that the student has, but it's a preference of the adult.
Oh, and it breaks my heart.
And trying to get the adult to understand that, you know, I mean, for somebody who has, you know, whatever eligibility for special education and say they have to have things a certain way all the time, but that's not the way that a teacher wants it done. Well, it's truly a need for that student to help them stay regulated, to help them stay calm, to help them make sense of their world. It's your preference. Mm-hmm. We need to adjust our viewpoint as the adult in that situation. I'm not saying in every situation with every student, but for that one, we have to know that, because when our children feel safe, when they feel comfortable, when they are as relaxed as possible, all of that stuff is going on in the back of the brain. And if that's all cluttered back here, our information is not going to get where it needs to get to and then come back out. And trying to get people to understand that is, I'm sure you know it too, an uphill battle.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It is, but we're making the world a better place.
Yeah,
right,
for sure. And, so how did your, go ahead, sorry.
I was just going to say, and again, your the concept of your show, right, is it really helps to open up that opportunity for children when they're not feeling so restricted.
Right. So how did your 2 younger girls do in school? Because I'm sure school didn't necessarily adopt the same philosophy in their setting that you had at home.
Yeah. So I did put them in Montessori schools. So I feel in some ways like I kind of cheated because of that. Right. Although they did have other parts of their life, they participated in sports, and in many ways, I think that they could see through some of the punishment, right? That they could kind of see it, what it was, and in some ways not let it bother them as much because they weren't inundated with it. So mm-hmm. I think that by, having your primary relationship, which is your parents, having that be punishment-free, I think really does help on the outside with the fact that you're right. You know, a lot of our world uses punishment. The other thing that I'm excited about, and I just kind of have to wait and see, is I'm hopeful that these two, as they get into, more intimate relationships, right? When they start seriously dating and, perhaps getting married, that they won't think of punishment as a way to control a partner, right? So I think that as we support children like you are and like this work, that we are not only changing this original family, but we're sending them out in the world to then change their families and their relationships. So that's kind of another goal that I have with this work.
Yeah.
Same would be true with yours, right? Hopefully when you talk to that teacher about that, hopefully that teacher thinks about that with their own children or their own partners or even friends, right?
Yeah. I'm going back again to your comment that, I think you're right that concept of, well, they did wrong, they have to be punished, mm-hmm. is permeating a lot of society. And if we could change that idea, like, they did me wrong and I need to help them understand why it was wrong, mm-hmm. versus I need to punish them.
That's right.
That mm-hmm. is, that is just like bouncing back and forth in my head, like the magnitude of that. Because I'm thinking of all the years. Every generation says, oh, these kids, oh, these teenagers, oh, these kids, they're so bad. They're so, so much worse. And we all have different behaviors. But when you look at the violence in our world now, mm-hmm. compared to 20, 30, 40 years ago, and that thought is just really like, is that why?
Yeah. It contributes. It's just like, when I talk about like the Columbine, I know there are a lot of factors there, but just seems to kind of be pervasive, right? Is that we're going to make people pay. Yeah. I'm going to make you pay for what you did. And that's really that punishment paradigm, because that's what they've lived, right? That's how they... Mm-hmm. how most of us grew up, right? So yeah. it's challenging. And, I think the other piece too, because I've talked to a couple other hosts, and, I think when we make a change this big, a lot of times fears come up, right? Like, oh my God. And I will admit, I was a little nervous too. It's like, who am I to experiment on these humans, right? Because what if I create these people who, feel like they can get away with anything and run wild through the streets as teenagers or right. But what I found was really the opposite, right? Because they had such a comfortable relationship with me that the last thing they wanted to do was misbehave, right? Because we had a good trust, and they knew that the house was a safe place and their dad and me were safe people to be with. And it actually made them, in essence, more conscientious, more kind of aware of how you treat people, because they were treated with respect.
Right.
But as a parent, it a change this big can bring up fears. So I just kind of want to share that as you process this, like,
yeah. And I think that is so incredibly true, because it is so different, and you can't see the future. So you don't know exactly you know, and like, that's why I asked you, like, how many people has this been successful with? Because, mm-hmm. you know, I can say with my students, it was very successful. I only raised one child, but I feel like our parenting style was very successful with her. And like I said, you know, we had some, okay, you got to do some timeouts, you know, you got to do a few of those things. But she, I think, has a better understanding of other people. And, you know, she is very kind and very generous, and she still gets frustrated with people.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
but
yeah.
But so do I.
Yeah.
You know, but I also have learned over the course of my life that behaviors are communication. What is the behavior communicating?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, trying to figure that out with people as well. And allowing our daughter to be whomever she's going to be and to have her beliefs, whatever they are, because it's her life. I shouldn't force my beliefs onto her. And so when she has come to me with a belief that is very different than mine or my husband's and how we raised her, it's like, well, okay. You know, I'm proud of the fact that you're so comfortable that you could come up with a belief that is different than ours, mm-hmm. that you didn't feel like you had to do what we, or not do, but had to believe what we believed, because if you didn't, we were somehow going to hate you or, you know, kick you out of the house or whatever. And yeah, I do lovely. Think we get a lot of kids that do that. They're like, well, this is the way mom and dad believe, so this is the way I believe.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we're doing them justice by that. We haven't set them up to be thinkers. And I think that's one of the things that we're missing in society, is that kids have become much more, this is the way to do it. I have to follow this path. If I don't follow this path, something bad is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Something bad could happen if you follow that path or you don't follow that path.
Right. Or it paralyzes them. Right. I've seen that in some of my children's friends, right. Is because I feel like I have to take this perfect path into my adulthood. And what if it's not? What it ends up paralyzing them, right? They don't even know. They don't even want to take any steps forward out of fear that it's going to be a wrong step. So you're right. They need to know that it's okay to make mistakes.
Yeah. And I don't want anyone watching or listening to feel like this is a simple process. And I think we've said that a couple of times. It's not a simple process. Mm-mm. It is much more time involved. And I don't want anybody to think that this is, you know, just completely hands off. First of all, I think the biggest thing that I want to get across today is, you know, it's not completely handed off. We're not completely freeing children of having any consequences to their actions. And it's complicated. There's it's very intertwined. And I mean, the scenario that you took us through of the 4-year-old with the muddy boots coming into the house after playing outside. Can you give one of like a teenager, what mm-hmm. one might look yeah. like for a teenager?
Yeah. Well, and the other thing I want to add, when you say that this is complicated, the other piece that I recognized is it also takes a lot of creativity, right? You have to be imaginative in how you approach situations. I remember when I was doing the work with redirecting children's behavior. And that's Catherine Coles, her work. And in her work, she says, try to focus on what you want them to do. So in essence, take the word don't out of your language with your child. And when I was first doing that, you would be surprised how often you want to say, hey, don't do that. Hey, don't do that. Right. And so yes. I would be like, I would literally stammer with my kids, have to creatively think, okay, here's what I don't want them to do. What do I do want them to do? Right.
And yes.
And yes. A simple example is, you know, you're tipping back in a chair, right? Don't tip back in your chair. No, keep all four legs of your chair on the floor.
right? Keep your chair flat, keep all four legs on the floor, right? So you're focusing on what you want, the behavior you want, rather than what you don't. But back to the teenage piece, you know, a common one is of course curfew or being late, right? And so I think in the first part of that is having that conversation with the young adult, right? You don't want to say, okay, here's the rules at our house. Everybody's home by 10 o'clock. But instead, when it gets to that point where they're going to be out, maybe they now have friends that drive or an older sibling who drive, or, you know, that you're not the one kind of controlling the time, is let them participate in that conversation. So, you know, what should curfew look like? And maybe they are going to say, hey, I think I should be able to be out till midnight. And so as a parent, you say, well, parent, you know, midnight probably wouldn't work for me, right? For one, on the weekends, I really like to be to sleep by 10:30, 11, and I won't be able to get to sleep until I hear you come home, right? So would you be willing to come home at 10:30? And maybe they'll counter and say, well, what about 11? And you can say, okay, I think 11 will work. So by having them have a voice, it's just like our two-year-old with the coat and the boots, by having them think through, oh, this is why I can't be out that late, because then, you know, mom can't sleep or whatever. So inviting them to be a part of that conversation and to truly, hopefully, have them come to an agreement on what that time is rather than just what they think you want to hear. And then have strategies in place for when things do go wrong, right? So you and I, as adults, sometimes we're late to meetings because another meeting has gone long, or we do hit terrible traffic, right? Life is just as complicated for our teenagers, if not more so than it is for us. And so having those conversations ahead of time. So what are we going to do if you can't get your friend to leave and they're the ones driving you, right? Is, you know, you have to let me know, right? Because otherwise, you know, and so having an agreed upon process for if somebody is going to run late, right? And working through that. And then let's say, well, then they're going to always be late. Well, so if they're three weekends in a row, they're late, then you have that conversation. So you've been late the last three weekends, right? Not, you know, don't be accusatory, just an observation. You've gotten home late for a variety of reasons the last three weekends. Let's have a conversation about, you know, being respectful of getting places on time, right? I understand that there will be times when you can't be, but you can't be late every time, right? And then having that conversation. So it's really helping them to learn, you know, how to be in the world.
Yeah. And I love that because it is so much of what you just said was how I taught my students and how I raised our daughter, how we raised our daughter. But it is that, you know, you do have to say what you want. Our brains don't process the negatives. Mm-hmm. They just hear. So if we say, you know, don't tip your chair back, all their brain processes is tip your chair back. So The other thing with that is, yeah, if you're constantly telling them what you don't want them to do, they're going to find a replacement behavior because, okay, this isn't what they want. They're finding a replacement behavior. Oh, and now you don't like their replacement behavior because it's still not what you want them to do. So they're going to get in trouble for that replacement behavior. So just tell them what you want, but it does take thought. It does because our natural inclination is to say, don't tip your chair back. Well, what do you want them to do? And why do you want them to do that? Mm-hmm. You know, that why is important. Again, that's going to reach the heart. You know, I don't want you to tip your chair back because there's a big likelihood that you're going to fall over and get hurt. And I don't want you to get hurt. You're not going to have the likelihood of falling over if you're all four legs of your chair are on the floor. Now that's for, you know, maybe a neurotypical person. If you have someone who is neurodivergent, then, and they need to be tipped back, then we got to figure out how can I help that situation?
Right. How can we make that safe?
And also the idea of talking with them when they're a teenager, having that buy-in, you know, explaining like, hey, you know, there's not a lot of great things that happen after 11:30 or 12. You know, people get stupid at that point and they're driving crazy because they're tired or they've been drinking or they've been on whatever, you know, so your safety decreases the longer you're out, which makes me as mom or him as dad that, you know, oh, okay, now I'm worried even more. And I worry about you because I love you. And mm-hmm. and really just, again, because you're reaching their heart and trying to get them to see, why do we have these rules? Rules are important for a reason. The three main reasons are safety, order, and respect. Mm-hmm. How do my rules, why do I want you to follow these rules? Is because of, you know, whatever your reasons are, whether it's safety, order, respect, or something else. Mm-hmm. And it's really difficult for us, and I found this with teachers, it's really difficult for them to say, well, why don't I want you to sharpen your pencil during class? I just don't like it because it annoys me. Well, okay, it annoys you, but why does it annoy you? You know, and mm-hmm. having to figure that kind of thing out. So I'm on board with what you're saying, and I appreciate and applaud that. I want to just very quickly bring up your website.
Thank you.
And I'm going to share just so people know what it looks like. So it is Rebecca Wolf, and what is going on? Oh, okay. It just said home, and I was like, home, where is it going? So yeah, it's your home screen is where it took me to. So Rebecca is Rebecca. Wolf is Woulfe. And so talk a little bit about, so you've got workshops, you've got individual services. So what kinds of things, if people go here, might they be able to sign up for?
Sure. So like I said, a lot of this has just gotten started over the last 6 months or so. And so I am in the process of working on a online virtual workshop that should be ready in the next 2 or 3 months. I have individual services where people want either Zoom or phone call. So I have done that with several parents where we just have a conversation about a challenging situation. And then on my resources page, I have information about my book. So very excited about that.
Awesome. And are there other places they can get your book? Is it just available here through your website?
No, it's actually available on Amazon and Barnes and Noble. So typical online sources for the book.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Perfect. Okay. Yeah. And you've got your services. Whoops. Some of the services right here. Events. Is that, these are some of the other podcasts that you've been on. Okay.
Right.
Perfect. Yeah. So I'm going to presume that at some point this one will be listed
Absolutely.
On your website as
yes.
well. Okay. Awesome. So yeah, again, that's Rebecca, Rebecca Wolf, Woulfe.com is how you can reach out to her. Rebecca, what final thoughts do you have for us today?
You know, a couple final thoughts I'd like to leave parents with is, you know, one of the things that you said is, you know, this can be challenging. And I said, it does take creativity. And I think what's most important though, is that you, you know, don't beat up on yourself if you slip, right? Don't start the negative language with yourself, right? Every one of us is doing the best we can with the resources we have. And so trying to be something you're not, I know can be challenging. And so really just be kind to yourself and be kind to your children, and it will go a long way. And that, you know, really, I like I said, I was surprised at how when we build relationship with our children, instead of having to punish and control, the gift is really just as much for the parent as it is for the child, right? It really, it breaks down that resistance, and it allows you to parent with an open heart.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love that you said that about give yourself grace, because it does take practice. Mm-hmm. And I was really, really good at it when I taught full time and was applying this every single day. But now that I am not in the classroom every day and I go in and I sub, I have found myself reverting back to the bad habits. And I'm like, oh, wait, no, come on. You know better than this, Shelley. You know, this is what you teach. What do you mean you're yelling? You know, you're raising your voice with these students. And so, yeah, absolutely. It takes practice. And, you know, I'm glad that you said to provide that grace for yourself, because mm-hmm. I think sometimes most of the time, we're probably our worst critics and mm-hmm. and you know, one, speaking the bad languages to ourselves and telling us how bad we're doing as parents, especially, and not giving ourselves that, okay, this is a great opportunity for me to show my child, hey, I screwed up. Now I'm going to come into, I'm going to ask you for forgiveness, or I'm going to talk to you about my mistake that I made and how I'm correcting that. Another great way to build that relationship or mend a relationship with your child or your coworker or whoever, because I think you can take these principles and apply them in other situations. It's not just a parent-child relationship.
Agree.
Yeah. Well, Rebecca, thank you so much for being my guest today. I've really enjoyed our conversation, and I hope you got to say everything you wanted to. I realized I've spoken a lot more in this episode than I normally do, but I got so excited about what you were saying and I agreed with it so much.
I think it was great. It was so, so good for me to hear a like-minded approach. I appreciated it. So thank you so much.
Oh, you're absolutely welcome. Thank you for that grace. All right, everybody, we will see you next time. Have a great week.
Hey, parents and teachers, are you tired of IEP meetings that feel like a battle? Let's put an end to the tension and create a collaborative, calm, and respectful environment together. Shelley Kino, your go-to IEP consultant, can transform your meetings into positive and productive experiences. With Shelley Kino, your child is her top priority, your voice is heard, and you become confident. Shelley Kino is making the world better for all, one IEP at a time. Visit www.shelleykino.com for more information and set up your free 20-minute consultation today. That's shelleykino.com, S-H-E-L-L-E-Y-K-E-N-O-W.